If you've ever dreamed of turning your favorite hobby or passion project into a full-time job, you're not alone. In fact, if you ask any entrepreneur why they started their business, many of them will talk about passion. That without a love for the products you're selling or the industry you're in, it's impossible to make it through the tough process of creating something from nothing. Today, we're talking about how being a true fan can actually drive serious success for an e-commerce brand. I'm your host, Kara Hogan, and this is The Empowered Marketer. The Empowered Marketer is brought to you by Zayus, the B2C CRM. Learn how you can get to know your customers better. Go to www.zayus.com, that's Z-A-I-U-S.com, to learn more. Brian Lim isn't just the founder of three successful e-commerce brands. He's also a big fan of the rave scene and a serious gloving enthusiast. What's gloving, you ask? I know I asked that myself. It's a combination of light show and dance that's incredibly popular at raves. There are even gloving competitions worldwide where people compete to perform the most intricate and exciting dances with lights. Brian's hobby quickly turned into a business when he started selling custom LED gloving lights through his brand, Emazing Lights. He then expanded into rave apparel with iHeart Raves, and then gaming with Into the AM. But behind it all was his passion for rave culture and his drive to succeed.
So I come from a very poor background. My parents immigrated from China to escape communism. So growing up, I always had to be an entrepreneur to get anything. If I wanted some more food on the table, I had to sell and bring in that money myself. So whether it was burning CDs or selling stuff on eBay and Craigslist, I've always been an entrepreneur. I went to UCLA because I felt like that was the only way I can get myself out of a shitty situation. Graduated and went to business technology consulting at Deloitte, and then stumbled across the rave festival scene through what is now Emazing Lights and gloving. Started selling, we created a event called Friday Night Lights, where we would meet up on Fridays and trade light shows, and I would sell gloving products, and we took $100 and grew it into a multi-million dollar e-commerce empire.
That's amazing. I love that. So I'd love if you told me a little bit more about that story. Like, how did it go from, you know, just a meetup and something so casual into this big business?
Yeah, so it was actually my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, who got me into gloving. So we fell in love with the art of gloving. We went to music festivals and did double team light shows and fell in love. And for selfish reasons, we really wanted to create better products as glovers, because the stuff out there was garbage. There were any good companies to buy stuff from. The customer service was terrible. So we felt like we just had to make it for ourselves. And so Emazing Lights started, and we made better products for ourselves, and everyone loved it as well. So they supported us. And then as we were going to more and more festivals, people always commented on, where do you get your clothing from? Because we would customize and make our own clothing. So we saw another need in the marketplace. So we created iHeart Raves, which is our first apparel brand. And the stuff that you see there is wildly unique. The whole purpose is to make people feel like $1 million when they're at a festival. And then our third brand is called Into the AM, which is another apparel brand. They were our top vendor for iHeart Raves. And then we acquired them over time. And today that brand focuses more on the esports and gaming world. So collectively, all three of the brands, we like to call ourselves the Emazing Group, where at the end of the day, we like to say that we're great at building brands and scaling them and selling great products online. Like, that's what we love to do.
Obviously, there's a lot of overlap in the audience of these three brands. So how do you reach them? Do you create a different message for each brand? And what marketing strategies are really driving growth for you?
You know, we came up during the social media, organic social media phase of life, where you could post on Facebook and hit 200,000 to 300,000 people instantly without paying a dime. Those were the kind of the golden ages for Amazing Lights. When we first started off, we were really hitting kind of that similar audience, people that loved raves and music festivals. But as we've grown, each of the brands has taken on their own unique identity, and their messaging has been a lot more direct and crafted towards their brand. So yes, there was some overlap initially, but it's definitely grown way beyond that. Some of our most popular communication channels, they're your core ones, right? Social media, PPC on top, SEO, email marketing. And what I'm most excited about, I would say, is more of that whole Facebook Messenger strategy in play, which I know folks have been testing for a couple of years now, and we've been getting just great results from it, especially through e-commerce, where the open rates are, 90% plus versus email open rates are 15 to 20% on good days. It's just a huge difference on Facebook Messenger. And it's cool because you're basically building your entire strategy on there, similar to email marketing with your drip campaigns, automation and all that, but just in a different realm where people are just super glued to opening up their Facebook Messenger. And especially for our audience, which is geared towards the 15 to 30 year old demographic, they just live on Facebook Messenger. So we got to hit them on those marketing channels.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about how you think about messaging. So you said it's like a drip campaign, like through email. Are you really using Facebook Messenger to acquire new leads and then get them to buy? Like what's the process for that?
Yeah, so Messenger for us, we're not acquiring new customers as of yet. That's what I'm really excited for, because we're starting to really launch that in the next month or two, just really trying to develop strategy before we launch it. We have a lot of experience there from the e-commerce side of updating existing customers on their order status, for example, or doing customer service through Facebook Messenger. So we've already seen great numbers there, and we're going to definitely scale that up. But in terms of new customer acquisition, during the early days, it was pure organic social media. And then it evolved into more of a paid strategy through AdWords. And then it's shifted completely over to Facebook paid ads. I mean, there is just no better place for us to acquire new customers at the top of the funnel. AdWords was great to capture kind of towards the bottom of the funnel, but when you have to introduce your brand, introduce what the art of gloving even is, it's really hard because on AdWords alone, because people aren't already searching for it. But on Facebook, with their whole paid model, their great targeting, it's much, much easier to introduce the brands and introduce their products and then to slowly get them down the funnel until they actually convert.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, obviously Facebook's targeting is pretty amazing. You could say, oh, does this person like music festivals? Boom, done. Great target.
Yeah, they probably take it a little bit too far at times. I think it's in the news where
yes,
paying some, you know, kids.
Yeah, they definitely took it too far. And I think it's going to take a step back. And yeah, I mean, I know that there's a lot of people concerned about the rising costs of paid ads, especially on Facebook. So,
you know, it's definitely true. Ads are constantly increasing in cost. But to me, that's the life cycle of any platform. AdWords was, you know, cheap at one point. It's super saturated. It's more expensive. Social, just purely on organic social, was great at one point. And as you know, they axed that. It's the same thing with paid ads on Facebook. But the thing is, I think the winners are the ones that always find a way. You know, Instagram, is much bigger now. Obviously, it's a Facebook company, but they're constantly introducing new types of ways to reach your audience. You know, stories wasn't there a few years ago, and now you can, you know, do ads through stories. You know, Facebook is now pushing their whole stories platform. People are actually using it now. But the point is, there's always something new, like Facebook Messenger type ads, And the winners are the ones that can grasp those new concepts or new ways of advertising, master them, and add it to their toolbox of reaching customers.
I totally agree. It's crazy how fast things change now, but I think that whoever's an early adopter, you just immediately have the edge over anyone else. It's crazy.
No, absolutely. But that's what makes it fun.
Yeah.
Yes. At the same time, right? If it was always kind of slow, then I don't think we would be as excited in the space.
That's so true. These three brands that you have are definitely kind of focused on a lifestyle. What does that mean to you, and how does it impact the focus for the brands?
Yeah, so the three brands, they were all started based off of my personal passions. I loved gloving. There you have Amazing Lights. I loved going to festivals and raves. There's iHeart Raves. I didn't start into the AM, but you know, I was ex pro gamer. I still love to play games. I wish I could play more, but now Into the AM is purely into that space. You know, to me, lifestyle just reflects your values as a person, and obviously they change over time. But for us, that's our niche. We build lifestyle brands because we care about your passions and what you want to do in life, and it all kind of just connects as a lifestyle.
Obviously, I poked around a lot on your websites of all of the brands, and I was just kind of like noticing the differences here and there. When I was looking at Amazing Lights specifically, I noticed that a lot of the pages have like really in-depth technical specs, you know, in addition to like video, seeing the products in action. So does your audience really care about knowing how the products work?
Oh, absolutely. And it's really fun for me as an entrepreneur to have multiple brands and companies to really keep me excited for the long term. So apparel, no, you're not going to really care about the technical specs, whether it fits, it feels good. You know, that's probably the most important thing. But for Amazing Lights, it's a consumer electronics brand. I would say the same way that you care about your skateboard, if you're a skater, you know, the technical specs, you know, are those wheels the right size to do that type of trick? Is your deck going to last if you keep on doing crazy ollies off of it? That's the same exact thing for glovers. We want to make sure that the lights that we use are durable and they basically do what they say they're going to do. Over the years, we've gone from taking these keychain flashlights and sticking them into gloves to the point where now you have gloving lights that are connected to our phones through Bluetooth, and then you can program them a million different ways through your phone. To me and to most glovers, that is, you know, a dream come true. It definitely does make a difference. And to me, as a marketer, you have to be able to convey the differences of your product versus everyone else. And we spent millions of dollars creating intellectual property as well, you know, having our own engineering team in-house, doing tons of market research, tons of testing. And, you know, if you do all that work and at the end of the day, you don't do a good job of conveying the differences of your product to the customer, well, how are they going to know? If you don't have these great videos and tech specs and you know, customers actually, you know, talking, like giving legitimate reviews, then they're not going to know how great the product is online. And most likely they're going to not care 5 seconds later and move on to the next big thing in their life.
That makes sense. I mean, you said you do lots of research and talk to consumers and all that, but do you think it makes it a little bit easier to understand what this audience wants because you did it? Does that give you a big advantage, I assume?
Oh, absolutely. You know, passion is, I think, extremely critical to what we do. And I think that's where you see most entrepreneurs, they will burn out in the first 2 to 4 years or so, you know, for many reasons. But if you don't truly love what you do, after a while, it gets old. It's like, why am I grinding if I'm not seeing the momentum or the results at the end of the day? You know, we've been doing this for 8 years now. It's not that long, but when you go through so many challenges, when you have those days where you're just like, oh my God, I want to, you know, just bury my head in the sand for a day or two. It's kind of falling back to those reasons of why you're doing this, why you love doing what you do. And a lot of it is understanding the people that we affect and the differences that we make in the world. And that gets us through those tough times. So passion to me is incredibly important.
I can definitely tell just from looking at your site, just externally, knowing nothing about you or anything. Like, I just was like, oh, he's into this. He knows these people. He knows his audience. He gets it. I could just tell. But yeah. I did want to talk a little bit about Instagram too. For iHeartRaves, you have a really big Instagram following, about 430,000 people, which nothing to sneeze at on that. So how does Instagram drive sales for that brand specifically? And do you do any influencer marketing or anything like that?
Absolutely. Instagram is huge for us, especially on the organic side compared to Facebook organic, which is completely like nothing, but on the paid side as well. I would give a lot of kudos to, especially for iHeartRaves, to Amanda and Kelsey, who become our in-house influencers, who have massive followings themselves, who live the lifestyle, and you know, they're part of the Unicorn Crew, where they're traveling the world to show kind of behind the scenes of iHeartRaves' impact with other festival goers. But influencers make or break our strategy at the end of the day, because gone are the days when people just trust what a company puts out. I mean, I don't think anyone trusts that stuff anymore. They really trust what other people, peers, or people they look up to are really saying about a brand or a product. So for us, we kind of look at it as, how do we just get the truth out there? Because we strongly believe in our products because, well, first of all, we use them ourselves and then we test them with many, many people in the scene. And once they're telling us that they love it, and after refining it so many times, our job is just to get it out there. And influencers help us tremendously.
I want that job of traveling around, going to different festivals to like show off products. It sounds an amazing job.
They got to go to Belgium last year for Tomorrowland, probably the biggest festival in the world, which I haven't got to go to, but it was about three or four of them from this office. But you know, it's not all glitz and glamour. They have to work when they're out there. The traveling part is exhausting at times, but these ladies, especially for our Lux Rave activation, it's called EDC in Las Vegas. It's Vegas's largest event of the entire year, bigger than any boxing show, bigger than any convention. 450,000 people over 3 days. Our influencers and our team here are working nonstop for like 7 days without sleep. It is a lot of tough work.
That sounds nuts. So glamour, but also work your butt off. Both.
Balance.
Gotta have the balance. And you mentioned that for Into the AM, you have an entire section that's dedicated to gaming. Why did you decide to move into that space? And how do you actually decide what products to feature on the site?
Yeah, so Into the AM started off really in the EDM scene as well. Into the AM started off as a promotion company, throwing club events. And then Into the AM Clothing was started in 2012. And then, you know, they became iHeartRaves' best vendors. But over time, we felt like there was too much overlap, where we were all targeting the festival scene and we wanted to diversify our audience. So we're kind of looking, well, Into the AM is all about outfitting your passions. We have more than just one passion in festivals and raves. And so after a lot of deliberation, we said gaming is the scene that we want to focus our time and attention on. So we've shifted massively into that space in the past 2 years or so. And ultimately what we want to be seen as are, you know, it's kind of like what PacSun is to the surf and skate brand. We want to be that gaming apparel lifestyle brand. And same thing with iHeartRaves and being that apparel lifestyle brand for that entire scene. It's a growing industry. It's a growing space that, you know, I always wanted to be a pro gamer. I would get killed by these guys or these girls that are playing today because they're so darn good. But, you know, we feel like we're pretty blessed and lucky to be able to grow our businesses and the backdrop of growing industries.
So a challenge that is true for any brand out there right now is Amazon. So these kinds of products are available on Amazon. You can get, you know, maybe a cheaper version of gloves for gloving or a cheaper version of the kind of rave clothing that you guys sell. How Right. do you stand out? How do you build customer loyalty and kind of, you know, fight back against Amazon if you can?
Yeah, so I always view, or Set the Amazing Group, we view Amazon as our frenemies. We sell on Amazon and we do a large amount on Amazon. But I think for us, it's a lot different than drop shippers or retailers. At the core of our strategy is, you know, we build and scale brands. So in order for us to scale a brand, you know, we have to look at what's unique to us. We like to try to do everything A through Z in-house. So if you see our facility here, we have 30,000 square feet. We're about a mile away from Disneyland. We do everything in-house other than manufacture the product, because that's a whole a different story. But my point is that we design and create our own products for our target audience. So it's really difficult for anyone to just copy our stuff. And we have to enforce our intellectual property, of course. But us differentiating ourselves through our products is at the core. And that's what makes us successful on Amazon. So you mentioned the gloves, for example. In that case, you get what you pay for. Yes, you can get a $5 pair of LED light-up gloves on there, but they're also going to break on you in the first, you know, 20 seconds that you open the package, versus buying something for, let's just say, $15, and it's going to last much longer. Or you can go up to our top of the line that's over $100, but you have Bluetooth connectivity and all of that stuff. But the same can be said for apparel. You know, do you want to buy a $5 shirt that's going to break or rip on you after one wash? Or do you want higher quality garments and high quality designs, designs that you can't get from anywhere else? So if we differentiate ourselves enough and make our products really stand out, it makes marketing a whole lot easier.
Mm. Yeah, if people actually love your products, it does. It makes your life easy.
Absolutely. And we create our products, again, primarily for ourselves. And if we like it, it comes out. If we don't, we have to be overruled by the audience.
You've also talked a lot about building this community and being part of this community. And I notice on your site, you know, different stories on there, like about the Face Melt crew. So why is community so important to your marketing, and why do you think it works?
I think especially millennials and the younger generation, they can smell bullshit a mile away. If you're not genuine and you're just trying to come in and trying to monetize their scene, they can see it. And for us, because we grew up in these industries and we love them and understand them, we want to be connected on a day-to-day basis, and not just digitally. We have to have a ground game, you know. So the Face Melt crew and the Unicorn crew, for example, we're at these festivals. We're creating competitions. We're creating the scene for gloving. So it allows us to stay connected and give back to the community. And at the same time, you know, hear their feedback on what they love and what they don't love about anything that we're doing. Of course, our products are the key. So if they're saying it sucks, we say, okay, why does it suck? Let's test it. How about these five other iterations? Are most of them happy? Cool. Let's launch with that and let's try to constantly evolve.
Yeah, you mentioned the gloving competitions. What are they like, and how are you sponsoring them, and are there prizes? Like, I'm very curious.
So that's one of those things where I'm going to have to send you some videos so you can really see. But the thing is, with gloving got banned from music festivals or some large music festivals back in 2011. We started the company in 2010. So me being a glover myself, we really believe in the art of gloving. So our mission is to legitimize the sport and art of gloving. So we had to create the entire league or the whole way that you compete in the gloving world to show the artistic side to it. Because when you have, you know, a sport with judges, where at our largest events we had, you know, let's say 300 competitors with 50 judges and 1,000 spectators, and it's all on film, and people, and there's tons of prizes. It's a legitimate event. It's covered by, you know, BuzzFeed and all these major outlets. In my eyes, it legitimizes the sport and the art of gloving. It was the only way that we can showcase the true talent and the skill set that these dancers are practicing every single day. So again, it was kind of like our backs were against the wall. The industry was very fresh, very new, but it suffered like a huge natural disaster. And it was like, are we just going to give up? Because our source of new audience folks, our new customers, was just obliterated. No, I mean, again, I think winners find a way. We pivoted and we created something that we loved. And even today, it's at the height of all the gloving competitions ever. So you can compete in over 100 physical competitions across the world. There's online rankings that shows you who's the best, who's at the top. And it's just constantly growing because we just love that scene.
That's great. I'm definitely going to go watch some videos right after this to like get up on what the winners look like. I'm super interested. So now is kind of the part of the interview where we talk a little bit more personally about you and your experiences as an entrepreneur, as, you know, a business person. So let's talk about failure. What's one time that you failed and what did you learn from it?
We failed a lot. We've made a lot of mistakes over the past 8 years or so. When you're growing at 40 to 50% year over year, you're just bound to not be perfect. And especially for us, it's a pretty young workforce here. We all really learned on the fly. You know, I didn't go to school to understand marketing or understand how to do e-commerce. I understand how to build products and how to source and all the logistics behind it. A lot of it is just really learning on the fly. If you ask me for probably the biggest ones that haunt me, you know, we were very blessed and lucky to have the whole Shark Tank experience, and we were growing extremely fast. It probably propelled us to grow faster than we should have. You know, so we're over hiring for a period of time, and, you know, we had to go through layoffs in different years, and those still hurt, you know, haunt me today. But if we didn't do that, we jeopardize the entire company and all of the other families behind our brands. So, you know, what have I learned off of that is to have much better control of your financials and your accounting. Because when you're in that run state, especially early on, I always think about opportunity costs. And it's like, do I want to invest my next, let's just say $100,000 in a new digital marketer or a new merchandiser or that new super slick warehouse that's going to get product out to our customers, you know, on a guaranteed time versus the numbers? Yeah, I mean, that just won for probably the first 6+ years of our company. So when you're kind of running that fast and you don't know your true numbers, you make some decisions that you probably, you know, should have did differently if you had the data at your fingertips. You know, entrepreneurs are successful because we're overly optimistic about things. you couldn't survive doing what we do. So it's a pro and a con of most of our personalities. But at the end of the day, we learn from it, and our numbers are better than ever, and we're able to, you know, make better decisions at the end of the day.
The other thing that I've been asking a lot of people, because, you know, we talked about this a little bit, the world of marketing changes so fast. So I would love to hear how you think that your role has changed the most in the past few years, and what do you think is going to be most important in the future?
Yeah, I feel like I have to constantly evolve and keep up with the times in my role as CEO. I think it's just going to get more and more interesting. I mean, e-commerce is not going to go away. Brick and mortar, I don't see how that trend is going to go away. I mean, our big fear is Amazon. you know, to me, I feel like it's pretty weird and unfair where they get all of our data and, you know, if they find winners, then they can just come in and make their own product. I mean, they're disrupting everyone. But at the same time, it's like, how do we build a constant moat around ourselves and our brands to keep people out? There are still lots and lots of opportunities. Amazon is not going to be creating the face melt crew or the unicorn crew, and they're not going to be at these events, you know, at that level of detail. So, you know, I feel like we have a very bright future in e-commerce, and a bright future in the festival industry and the entire gaming world. So, you know, we're just excited, and but we have to also keep ourselves grounded to the daily grind and stay focused on what's important, because there's so many shiny objects out there that, you know, I think throw most people off from being successful in life.
To learn more about Brian and the Amazing Group, you can visit amazinggroup.com for links to all of their three core brands. Think we should be talking about your brand on the next episode of The Empowered Marketer? Just email me at empoweredmarketer@zayas.com or tweet at me, KaraHogan27. Thanks so much, and I'll see you lovely humans again in 2 weeks.